Warapa, warapa, na waparam, warapa, warapam, yeah.
Hello, Hollow.
Hello, Substantial. Hello.
How's it going?
It's good. It's good. I'm kind of having a little coffee.
Yeah.
Sun. Well, it's actually not sunny. It's a bit. I don't know.
It's quite overcast, isn't it?
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah,
but it's kind first of light.
It's the first time it's been overcast though for ages.
Yeah, that's true. It's been lovely and sunny this past week. I've been loving it.
I know, it's been a bit of a blessing. I see you've been to the park.
I have, yes.
Yeah, I've been following you on Instagram, watching that little process.
Watching my jaunts to the park.
I mean, I was there yesterday. It's so beautiful at the moment, our local park.
Yeah.
I know. And I felt like I was being transported back to a previous generation. You know, I was kind of thinking about when these parks, these sort of Victorian parks and Edwardian parks were put in place. It must have been so that people could go and stroll in the evening.
So nice. It was interesting because I feel like I've discovered new parts of the park.
Yes.
I was thinking
it's enormous.
That. I was like, oh, it's so much bigger than I thought it was.
Mm-hmm. I went up the back yesterday. I went up behind the golf course and around.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh,
near where the food forest is. Have you found the food forest?
Yes, I have. Yes, actually. It's very nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was there the other day. I was taking a selfie and then a runner ran past as I was taking
that photo.
And he literally just said to me, he was like, oh, better than any filtery. Because I was like, aha. And then later on, I was walking down the hill kind of towards the edge of the park and I saw him again. And he was just like, hello.
I like that. There's definitely, I think things have shifted a bit because when I first got out of isolation and went down to Glasgow Green, I was really struck by the sort of fearfulness of people that nobody was making eye contact. Whereas it felt, certainly yesterday in the park, it felt as though people were, you know, it wasn't inappropriate conversation, but it was, you know, people were smiling and sort of making eye contact and things. It was nice.
I kind of have made eyes at a few.
Made eyes?
Well, I don't know.
Have you?
I don't know, maybe. Accidentally, I've like caught the eye of quite a few men. Not intentionally, more just like walking down, like walking through the park, and then we're walking down the street, and then like looking up and seeing like someone looking at me. I look at them, and then we just smile and then walk.
There's a whole short story to be written there, isn't there?
Yeah. So strangeness of that.
Eye contact in a time of plague.
Oh yeah, we're not allowed to touch, but we can look at each other.
Oh, it's gosh. Weird. Oh, Fiona, oh my goodness, it's turning into a whole other kind of podcast.
I just find it really funny. Yeah.
How's your hair?
Yes, it's good. So, update, got a haircut by my flatmate on Monday, so a few days ago, and I was so impressed. She just went for it. It was great.
What kind of scissors did she use?
Just random scissors I had. So like not hairdressing or scissors. And it was quite funny because I think like she's really thorough, so it was great. But I kept saying to her, I was like, I just don't care. I just want to be shorter. It doesn't matter if it looks awful.
It is a big pressure though to have somebody else's hair in your hands.
Yeah.
Your respect for hairdressers.
I know. I was like, wow. But yeah, you've had your haircut as well.
Yes, I had an appointment last night. Managed to get a last minute appointment with Laura K. Sayers. I tell you what, I mean, I'm if I had to pick somebody to be in lockdown with, Laura's a great person anyway. But picking somebody who knows what they're doing with a pair of scissors has been an extra bonus. So she cut my fringe last night. She did a great job. I feel I built it up too much for her though, because I'd kind of gone on about it quite a lot. So I think she was feeling the pressure, but she's done a brilliant job.
It
dry. She didn't cut
it
wet. Well, apparently that's the mistake people make, is if you cut it wet, obviously you can end up cutting too much.
I think with the fringe, that's probably right, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And she did the thing where she kind of went vertically into it, which is what my hairdresser does.
Oh my goodness, that is professional.
It was very professional. And obviously she's got good scissors, so it's a win. It's an all-round win. Because on one level, I don't care what it looks like, except that I'm doing a bit of TV stuff next week.
Yeah.
And so I sort of don't want to have an asymmetric, you know, too short fringe for that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But it's fine. And she's done a wonderful job. So kudos to Laura K.
Well done, Laura the Lodger.
Yeah, I know. Laura Lodger's done a great job. I saw Laura Moyer last night, by the way, just to, you know, Laura update.
Oh.
By Zoom. So we were in a meeting together. It was nice to see her. She was looking well.
I saw Less Waste Laura last week. We had a little catch up coffee. Yeah, it was nice.
Oh, that's good. So we, as far as we know, all the Lauras are well.
Oh. All the Lauras that you've been journeying with us.
Also, actually, I've been meaning to ask you this for a few weeks. Somebody said to me, what about Fiona's holiday? Fiona was going to Italy with her family.
Lots of people didn't pay attention. I know. That's so nice. I know. Well, yeah. Obviously it's cancelled. So yeah. That's sad. So cancelled it a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
Kind of. Yeah. Difficult. So that's sad. Yeah. So I have no holidays planned.
No.
Currently.
No. Well, we're still debating about our French holiday because we've got 2 weeks in France at Villa booked for July and just not sure. I emailed the lady yesterday though. She lives in Finland and said, look, we're still really hoping to come, but obviously we may have to cancel. Mm-hmm. And she was very understanding. And I said, I kind of wanted to, and I suppose this is a general point, isn't it? I kind of wanted to say to her, but we would like to rebook. You know, because I think it's quite important for people in businesses to, I know it doesn't pay the bills, but at least to have some sense that people are a bit loyal to them. So
Yeah. I hope you get to France.
I think it's kind of unlikely at the moment, yeah. But we'll see. We've got till the end of May to decide. So. Mm. Get money back. Yeah. So that's what it is. That's the catch-up.
The catch-up.
In the catch-up. And, you know, if anybody has any questions from previous episodes that we've forgotten, we've left hanging, do get in touch. And I believe you spoke to somebody recently about listening for longer.
I'll give her a shout out actually because she like really enjoys this podcast. So she's called Luana. So if you're listening, Luana, this is for you. Mm-hmm. And she is training for a marathon at the moment and loves listening to our podcast, but was talking about how she would love it if we could do a 4-hour one so that she can listen to us the entire time. I was like, maybe not.
That could be an extra though, couldn't it? It could be if we did the Patreon thing to you know, bring in supporters for the podcast, we could maybe offer longer marathon running podcasts.
Yeah, we could do some like, I don't know, some motivational stuff. Mm-hmm. Like there could be fun stuff we did.
Yeah, we could be like Couch to 5K Laura. Oh, who's another Laura? That's the other Laura in my life, Couch to 5K Laura.
Oh, right, okay.
We could
You're doing great.
That's right. You might be experiencing Stitch, do you think? I'm experiencing a heart attack. Anyway, Fiona Hollow, well, yes, and we will obviously, bear that in mind. Look at a 4-hour. I mean, we've got the time, Fiona. We could do a 4-hour.
We do. I don't know if really, other than Luana, I don't know if anyone else would want to listen to us for 4 hours. No offence to us or Luana or
right.
Anyone
I mean, it's us that, yeah, that's true. Good point. Good point. I know it's maybe the goodness is in the short burst.
Yeah.
So tell me, what's caught your eye this week?
This week I read Normal People by Sally Rooney. So it's a book. I think it won lots of prizes, book prizes when it first came out. And it was released in 2018. And so I feel like quite a lot of people have already read it probably, so I'm a bit late to the game. But it's actually, part of the reason I read it is because I saw that it's been turned into a TV series for BBC. Mm-hmm. So that's coming, it's coming out this week actually on BBC iPlayer. So the book is set in Ireland and it's about two, I suppose it's a love story, really. And it's about two people, Connell and Marianne, and they grow up in the same town, and then it's kind of about their sort of, I suppose, their love story, how they try to be with other people, kind of always get drawn back to each other. And the premise at the start, this isn't giving anything away, mm-hmm. Connell's kind of a popular boy at school, and Marianne mm-hmm. is kind of seen as a sort of a little bit of an outcast. Mm-hmm. But Connell's like mum is like the cleaner in Marianne's house, and so he'll often go pick up his mum from her house, and actually he's really drawn to this girl, this kind of outcast, but they start a sort of relationship I suppose on the down low, so no one at mm-hmm. their school knows, and then it's all about kind of their story, but the whole thing really is linked to the fact they always are drawn back to each other. Mm-hmm. and they're not very normal with each other in the sense mm-hmm. that their behavior is sometimes kind of toxic. It's a bit of a strange one. And then the people that are seen as like normal in their lives, so people that they try to have relationships with that are a bit more normal, just it never seems to work out. And yeah, I found it really interesting. The way it's written is quite interesting because perspective wise, it's each chapter is a different perspective. So it'll be Marianne Connell. But sometimes you're not entirely sure who, when it first starts in the chapter, you're not entirely sure whose perspective it is.
Yeah.
And there's little bits of the plot where it'll be one person's perspective versus another. So mm-hmm. they'll think one person, like Connell will think that Marianne said one thing. Marianne thinks she's not said that. And so it's kind of this sort of slight conflict yeah. sometimes. And it was just a really, really easy read.
That sounds really good.
Yeah, it was really good. Yeah.
As you're speaking, it reminds me of One Day. Did you ever read One Day by yes. David Nichols?
Yes.
Which was made into a film. The film wasn't brilliant.
The film was rubbish.
The film was rubbish because it had Anne Hathaway in it and trying to do a Yorkshire accent, and it was pretty ghastly. But the book was really interesting. It was a similar structure, yeah. so you would have different perspectives yeah. from the two of them. And again, it was again quite similarly. It was a very unlikely relationship it tracked.
Yeah, so it's, I think the premise of this book was, it's kind of called Normal People in the sense, and I think a lot of it is that both Marianne and Connell really desire to almost like be seen as normal,
mm-hmm.
but both of them are just flawed characters who somehow always return back to something that's a bit abnormal and that's very like challenging.
Yeah.
So they always seem to choose the harder path, which yeah. isn't actually always the best thing.
Yeah.
Interestingly, a lot of time you don't like the characters, but uh-huh. for some reason I still was quite addicted to reading it.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
And it's coming on the iPlayer.
Yeah, so it's coming out on the iPlayer. It's being released this week on BBC iPlayer as a TV series. And obviously mm-hmm. it's set in Ireland, so the Irish accents are going to be lovely to listen to.
Fantastic. Yeah. That sounds very good.
But what
that
about you? Wonderful. What's caught your eye?
Well, my eye has been caught for the last 3 weeks, actually, by something. It's been National Theatre Live.
Mm.
So lots of people will be aware of the fact that National Theatre, like a lot of cultural institutions during this time, are making some of their back catalogue of work available for free on the web. Now, you could watch this stuff all the time, and I think I'm trying to be a bit wary of overloading with lots of things. So I think you can certainly go to the RSNO, I think, on a Friday night. You can watch musicals, I think, on a Friday night, West End stuff, Andrew Lloyd Webber stuff. You know, there's lots of stuff going on. But I have chosen, I suppose because of a theatre background, I've chosen to watch the National Theatre, which has been great. Mm. Well, it's brought up a lot of things to think about. So far I have watched One Man, Two Governors with James Corden, which I had really wanted to see live and didn't manage to see, which farcical, it's an adaptation of The Servant of Two Masters, lots of slapstick, lots of sort of stage trickery and stuff. Funny, really good. Last week it was Jane Eyre. So that production I had seen. So I'd seen it at the National in London. And it was a really wonderful experience of seeing it on stage live. Beautiful set, very intense performances, very lots of musicians on stage and all that kind of thing. So I was quite curious about how the filming of that would work. And it was again similarly intense. The performances, it was great to watch them. It was very long. I'll come back to that in a minute. And then this week it was Treasure Island. Now I've only watched half of it so far.
I love Treasure Island.
I love Treasure Island. The story of Treasure Island. My dad read Treasure Island to me when I was little, and so it has a kind of childhood resonance for me. And I think because Robert Louis Stevenson was Edinburgh, you know, there's always a bit of a kind of connection to some of the stuff that he wrote. So yeah, I love Treasure Island, and it was, you know, a good family show, kind of lots of gore, lots of kind of pirating so far as I can see. So it's fun. So a real mix of different types of theatre. I think the filming has been really good. I mean, I've been struck by that before when you go to the cinema to see these NT Live things. The standard of production is actually very high. So you're not just seeing a fixed camera watching a play from a distance. You're seeing close-ups of performances and so on. So it's really, really good quality. A couple of things I thought about this. One is that I was struck by the fact that Jane Eyre was really long. In fact, to be honest with you, Fiona, in both One Man, Two Governors and Jane Eyre, I've fallen asleep in the second act. and I've had to, you know, rewind and watch again. I think it's not just that I'm tired, although I think there's a bit of that. I think it's because watching on screen is harder work than being in the theatre.
Yeah.
So I did remember Jane Eyre being long when I went to see it, but somehow being complicit in the room means that you stay alert and you stay awake. So so there is something that it kind of makes me think about all the other things I'm looking at on screen, or even meetings. We do have a tolerance really for how much screen engagement we can have. So there's a bit of that going on. The other thing is Lodger Laura and I have both been watching this, and we've been doing it as a bit of a making it a bit of an event.
Oh, lovely.
So we have a little ice cream potentially at the interval. We might line up a little gin and tonic, you know, and for the second week for Jane, it's a bit funny, a bit silly really, but I had set up two gin and tonics and put a little, you know how when you pre-order at the theatre?
Oh, they put a little like, label. A
little ticket, yeah. Put a little ticket. Sears and Stewart.
That's so cute.
Just to make a little bit more of an event of it. But there's something quite nice about that. So it's not just me sitting on my laptop watching something, but actually we've decided, for example, this weekend, it's Twelfth Night with Tamsin Gregg. So we're both quite keen to see that. And we're going to do it on Sunday night. And we're, you know, probably do it about 7:30, 8 o'clock, something like that. And, you know, make a bit of an event of that. You can watch live. So you can do that thing where I think it's a Thursday at 7 or 7:30. Mm-hmm. Lots of people nationally are watching together. But the thing stays on YouTube for a week for free.
That's fun. I'm gonna watch Treasure Island now you've talked about it. Because I literally love that.
Well, you have to do it before tomorrow, because whenever Twelfth Night goes live, Treasure Island will come off.
Oh, no. Okay.
So I think that is also encouraging the live event aspect of it, actually, because you know you've only got 7 days.
Yeah.
So I'm going to finish watching it tonight, actually. So we thought we'd talk today about value.
Yes.
Now, I have to confess, I was going to go away and do lots of research, and I've not really had time to do that.
I mean, every week I feel as though I'm like, okay, I'm going to research this really loads. And then every week I like forget / I just think, oh, I'll just wing it.
We don't plan these very well.
Well, not that no, we don't plan very well, but people always often ask me, like, oh, is it scripted? I'm like, no.
Very much not. I think what I do, I quite like it when we know in advance what it's going to be.
I do think that is helpful.
We always do know in advance. We don't just come on and waffle, do we?
But no.
Waffle within a framework. but it does make me aware. So you know, knowing that we were talking about value, I've kind of been aware of that thread of thought this week as I've gone about my business, really. But I haven't got any quotes, I'm afraid, this morning.
That's okay.
Although I've been thinking a lot about sparrows, I suppose I could throw that in. So I've been sitting looking at my hedge as a source of great fascination to me at the moment, and there are some little sparrows that dot about. And every time I see the sparrows, I do think about the Bible quote about God knowing the number of sparrows. And I think, wow, because they are two a penny. Mm. I'm not giving you the whole quote here, I'm just using fragments. But, you know, sparrows, two a penny, and to some extent they don't really matter, but actually they have great value in the kingdom of heaven. So there's a starting quote.
Oh, wow. That was a very profound starting point.
Thanks very much. How do you value who you are and what you do, Fiona?
I feel like every week you ask me a really profound question that I'm not prepared for, and I'm like, I don't know. How do I value myself and kind of what I do? I think I'm not very good at this.
Mm-hmm.
I think... I suppose it depends what you mean by value, doesn't it? Because I think sometimes we attach the word value to like money and kind of what something is good value, or like it'll be a certain like value in terms of like amount of money. So I think that's one side of things. So I think when it comes to like, I suppose, artistic value, maybe, of like how I value myself. And what I have to offer, I'm not very good at that. And it was really interesting. I remember in like university, we had one of my courses, theatre courses, we had someone come in from Creative Scotland to kind of talk about the process of applying for grants and like money if you're having a creative project. And they talked a lot about, we kind of kept asking them, we were like, so how much would you suggest we like if you're putting on a creative project and you're basically asking for a salary towards that, mm-hmm. how mm-hmm. much, they were like, oh, it's all about just valuing your art and kind of attributing how much you think your time is worth. And we were all like, well, we have no idea what that really means yeah. because yeah. it's very subjective. And yeah. I think there's some artistic projects I've done where I've like been paid nothing and I've mm-hmm. kind of like been like, that's okay. Or I've been paid, like basically not really been paid. I've been given like a bursary and that's fine. But mm-hmm. actually now I look back and I think I wasn't really valuing myself there mm-hmm. and like what mm-hmm. I bring. And I think,
Sorry.
I feel it so like, but then also like value is also like how much you like feel, for me anyway, how much I think I'm worth something.
Yeah.
Like not just in terms of monetary, but like maybe like in terms of, we talk about values and like mm-hmm. how much I think I have something to offer to the world. Mm-hmm. And I personally am not very good at that.
And it is tricky though, isn't it? Because you're right, it is very subjective. So there is something about me having confidence in what I bring, which is quite hard because particularly in an artistic context, it's often very personal. So what I maybe write is very personal and it comes deeply out of who I am. And I find it hard to measure that against what other people might write because it comes from who they are or it doesn't come from who they are.
Yeah.
So somebody asked me that the other week about, well, how long, you know, producing pieces of spoken word, how long will it take you to produce? And I was like, well, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I have to, and I always underestimate how long it takes me to do something, but also the amount of, you know, so it's not just the time. So I could add up my number of hours it takes me to sit and write a poem, but that's not the same as, you know, what do I have that is unique that means I can do that in a way that someone else can't. Yeah. So there's a whole subjective thing there. But there's also the question of market value.
Yeah.
You know, so actually what I bring and what I offer is only worth what somebody's willing to pay for it. Mm-hmm. And that's something I find really difficult. I have found really difficult over the years, particularly because a lot of the work I've done has been, well, it's not primarily, but a lot of it has been within a kind of Christian context. Yeah. And I'm sorry, I'm just going to say it. Christians are not willing to pay for things.
No.
Everybody thinks, oh well, you know, you're doing it for the Lord, so you should just be able to do it for nothing. Well, that's fine, but I can't eat for nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
And if I was a plumber, you wouldn't ask me to come and fix your toilets and not get paid for it.
Yeah.
Regardless of my faith perspective. So that was a minor rant at that point. So it is interesting though that there is something about, you know, what the market value is. And I suppose that's what I was getting at last week with the footballer chat. Mm-hmm. You know, because I think often that is the example. It's a slightly lazy example, but that's the example that's used of, you know, why on earth are we playing Premiership footballers this huge amount of money. I did look this up actually. So the average salary in the Premiership in December 2019 for the first time exceeded £3 million per annum. Average salary, it was huge. Man City is averaging £134,000 per week for their Premiership footballers, which works out at £6.98 million per annum.
Wow.
According to The Guardian, that's my source for that. So we get into this argument about, well, what is it that footballer brings? Well, I suppose it's somebody's willing to pay for it. And let's be honest, within sport, within the media, within the film industry, people are willing to pay for it, not because they're valuing, oh, let's pay somebody a lot of money for what they can do, but it's because they can make money on the back of it.
Yeah.
So Man City makes a lot of money in sponsorship and merchandise and, you know, it's profile. Same with, you know, that's why Hollywood actors are paid vast amounts of money. So there are lots of people in these industries who are actually quite good at making a lot of money. So I think that's why I feel aggrieved when all the blame is put on the 19-year-old who's good with his left foot. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Because to some extent they are also being exploited within that. Although they're not. You can't say that somebody who's earning, you know, an average of £134,000 a week is being exploited, but everybody's making money on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, so there's a subjective thing, there's the market value thing. And I think the reason I thought it would be quite interesting to talk about this just now is because I think we are having the conversation in society about what jobs we value.
Yeah.
Certainly. Maybe come back to, you know, how you value yourself as an individual, because that's a different argument, isn't it? But even just the monetary value or the kudos value we put on the jobs that people do, I think at the moment is up for debate.
Yeah, I think so. I think, I know, I pre-pandemic, it was interesting, isn't it? Because there was a big rhetoric around, I suppose, like, some of the maybe slightly lower paid jobs. So, and certain, and those jobs often being like, there was a big rhetoric about, oh, people are coming and taking our jobs. And there's been a massive anti-immigration, I suppose, movement in the last few years. What's interesting now is thinking about the fact that we've been very poor at valuing those individuals who are doing, frankly, very poorly paid jobs, long hours, like really kind of undervaluing them prior to this pandemic. And now they're the ones like keeping everything going. Mm-hmm. And it's, I find it really interesting that all of a sudden they are the people who are like really, really key. They're the key workers.
Mm-hmm.
Like those who, and a lot of the time, yeah, they are people who are from different countries.
Mm-hmm.
Not all the time, obviously, but mm-hmm. I just find that quite interesting because people say, oh, they're taking our jobs. But I'm like, well, they're taking jobs that are very poorly paid and poorly valued.
Mm-hmm.
They're not, and it's not really even taking, I just don't even like that rhetoric. No. But it's
because a lot of the time people don't want to do those jobs.
Yeah, I'm like, do you want to go and clean toilets and like hospitals all day? Is that what you want to do?
Mm-hmm.
Like that, someone's got to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, it is interesting because it also comes back to that question of, you know, because I have very limited experience of this, but you know, certainly when I came out of drama school and I was looking for work, I ended up doing quite a lot of retail jobs in London and on minimum wage, and it's hard work. You know, it's hard work. You think about people going in and out of people's houses doing home care stuff. It's physically hard work.
Mm-hmm.
It's you know, refuse collectors. Retail, I always think, it gets really underplayed because retail, you've got to kind of present the lovely image of the company mm-hmm. when you're on the shop floor, but you've also got to lug stuff around the stock room. Yeah. You've got to be there at 6 a.m. to unpack the boxes.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to kind of have the stock knowledge in your head. Mm-hmm. You know, you're asking a lot of people when they're being paid, you know, under £10 an hour. Mm-hmm. I mean, I used to earn about £7 something. I don't know what it'll be now. That was about 10, 12 years ago. And so actually, at that point in my mid-30s, I was probably working harder than I had in a number of the other jobs I'd done previously where I was being paid far, far more money.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know where I'm going with that really, but I do think it's interesting. I think there's something interesting at the moment because a couple of things I'd noticed, the fruit farms and in Perthshire are doing a big recruitment drive at the moment because obviously a lot of their fruit picking labour comes in from Eastern Europe in particular. Mm-hmm. So there are jobs to be had at the moment. And I wonder if at the end of all of this, I really hope that we will value what people do, both in terms of how we think of that person, but also in terms of how we pay them for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the other thing I'm struck by as well at the moment, I mean, I know quite a lot of people who have been furloughed from their jobs and they're having that sense of, well, who on earth am I?
Yeah.
Because you've taken away the role that I did and because you're saying that the role is no longer necessary in this time.
Mm-hmm.
Oof, that's a big hit to your sense of self-value, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I think I suppose some of this is like in terms of money value, but also like feeling valued by our employers and where do we find our value? And maybe some of that links to like where do we find our identity as well. And I think I find that interesting that some of the like jobs at the moment that are like being furloughed are jobs that frankly at this time of crisis like they're maybe not as necessary. That isn't to say that they won't be necessary. Like I think hopefully a lot of people will go back into their jobs after this, but I suppose all of a sudden having lots of free time if you've been furloughed and being like, well, where do I find my value? Because it was in my job and I'm not allowed to do my job right now. So what do I fill my time with? What kind of, where do I find purpose? And I suppose it's, for some people, or definitely quite a lot of people I know, a lot of their purpose is primarily through their vocation and the thing they get paid for. And when you can't do that, where do you find purpose and value and identity?
Do you think that coming back to the intergenerational thing, do you think that is different for your generation than mine? I mean, I think there's a difference because a lot of people I know, by the time you get to your 40s, you're at a certain level within an organization, which actually doesn't mean you necessarily need it when we go into time pandemic. So I think there is a difference in terms of what you're doing with work at the different stages. But do you think there's a difference in how our generations approach the sense of value, particularly in the workplace?
Yeah, probably. I think, I don't want to speak for my whole generation.
No, I know. Neither do I.
But maybe it's because partly I've got a lot of friends who are passionate about things. So there may be the things that they value are, like, in a job would be like finding a kind of what we're saying, like finding purpose.
Yeah.
And matching up like employment with passion. And so that might mean actually they're willing to take a pay cut, they're willing to work for free, do an internship. And I think, I suppose I've got a lot of friends who are in the artistic community or who are like in like working in the charitable sector, or working in places where they're really passionate about I don't know, climate justice or passionate about community development. So a lot of the time they're falling into jobs where they're maybe not being paid loads, but they get a lot out of it.
Yeah.
And I think probably people my age, generally speaking, are there's that whole narrative, isn't it, of like the millennials, oh, they're kind of only, they can only do things they feel like are worthwhile. But that's really, I think that is quite true, but I don't think that's a negative thing. No. Frankly, I see that as a really positive thing.
Well, I mean, I wonder if it has prepared your generation a bit more for what we're going through. I would want to caveat that, I think, because I think when you get to my generation, you have a lot more responsibilities. So you have family responsibilities, you have caring for elderly parents responsibilities, you have, you know, communities. So all of which is to say, you know, we can't all run off and do what we feel passionate about, because actually there's a financial reality often at the stage I'm at. But I do wonder, so all the sort of negative comments about the millennials and the, oh yeah, they're just so flaky because they all want to go off and run coffee shops and blah, blah, blah. Actually, I wonder if it does mean you are more inclined to be adaptable. So I've noticed that. And again, in the artistic community, I think that's true. I've noticed a number of friends who are actors and performers are, you know, they're going off and they're working for Asda, or they've been a van delivery for Morrison. So delivery person. And I wonder if there's something about when your regular work is quite unstable anyway, you're a wee bit more flexible about, well, do you know what, I'll just go and work in Asda for a while and that'll be fine.
Yeah.
And something will pick up. Whereas if you have built your whole sense of identity and value and you've been in a career path that has recouped big rewards, I think it's a lot harder. There's a humbleness to saying, actually, I'm prepared to go and stack shelves.
I know, because frankly, I'm like, I'd be totally happy to go and do that. Like, I'm really happy to go and play my part and do something that wouldn't be considered like a step up in the career ladder. I just don't think, I don't know, I'm just not driven in that way. I suppose there's other people my age would be different in that. I know this, that I have got friends and people I know who would like not think like that. But
yeah,
I'm like really willing to go and work in an environment that would be like slightly lower pay, but like, I suppose like being part of something bigger and feeling as though I'm like, it's a rewarding thing to think, oh, I'm playing a part in like helping the country. It's, and maybe that's like me going quite macro, but there's certainly the sense that I'm like, okay, I like would be willing to go and work in my local supermarket and stack shelves because I know that that would be like an important job at this time.
Yes.
And a valuable job at this time. And that would be okay. I think, yeah, there's value in like doing stuff that feels like you're part of something bigger.
Yeah. And similarly, I think I think both your generation and my generation, we have not lived through any major national crises.
Yeah.
And so it is a bit of a test of your mettle, isn't it? Yeah. Regardless of what age you are, you know, how prepared are you to say actually earning the big salary and, you know, having the nice driveway or whatever. But you know, I think we've bought into a whole myth about what matters.
Yeah.
I think, and without being crass about it, I think there's a little bit in this season where when these things are stripped away, we begin to think, actually, what does matter? Really, yeah. And what part do I play in all of that?
Yeah. I think some of this as well, like, I think, like, bouncing off that is thinking about, okay, post-pandemic, what's the first thing I'm going to do?
Yeah.
And I think that's where you can start to notice the values that you have. When you're like, okay, what am I looking forward to? And maybe at the start of pandemic, that might have been one thing, and now it's shifting a bit. So, like, for me, I think, like, post-pandemic crisis, post-lockdown, probably, like, the thing I'll, like, want to do is go climb a hill or go to, like, the beach. For other people, that will, like, look different. I know some people will really want to go on holiday, or they'll really want to see certain friends or do certain things. But I think that's where a lot of the, like, where you can start to see your values is when something's taken away, and what is it when you look forward to, kind of, to eventually when this is over, who knows when that'll be, but thinking about what are you going to do, what are the things you're going to prioritize.
So there we are, value. One final question on that, I suppose, is just about Banksy.
Oh yes,
do you remember the artwork? What do you think about that? So that was a Banksy artwork. It was October 2018. And he basically put a piece of work into an auction, and as soon as the hammer hit the gavel,
Oh my gosh, I was obsessed with that video.
Yeah, it shredded. It self shredded.
It was so cool.
Yeah.
What a statement.
I didn't have time to. I know exactly. I didn't have time to go look it up properly because I wanted to see if there's any commentary on it. But anything I could find was all round about the time when it happened. You know, the sort of shock of it. But at the time, they talked about the fact that actually the value of the artwork might go up because of the event that it was part of. Oofed.
Yeah. Oh,
oofed.
Love it.
Things are only worth what people are willing to pay for them.
It's true. Except, Banksy knows it.
Yeah, except sparrows are worth as much as anything. Right, Fiona Hollow, do you have a creative kernel for us?
I do. Creative kernel this week is just thinking a little bit about how you can support people with your money at the moment. So I've spoken a little bit about money in, I think, previous episodes, maybe giving some money away, thinking through what are you saving, what are you kind of spending. But I've been really pondering, I suppose, supporting artists at this time. And choosing to do that. So I suppose, I think it was the last episode that I talked a bit about our friend Catherine the Poet's pandemic poems. And I absolutely love that I can support my friend as she makes art. And my creative kernel, I suppose, is to just maybe research artists, and if you have spare money at the end of the month when you get paid, or if you get paid and you think, I've got a little bit of extra cash, why not support the artist and buy something that they've made? And it could be that you've got people in your radar that you think, oh, but one day I'll kind of maybe buy something off them. But actually, what would it look like for you to do that now? And people are very creative at the moment in some ways, and in some ways also people maybe are needing a bit more money, but also there's something about the fact that artists are responding at this point in time and making quite interesting work, I'd say. So there are certain people I follow on Instagram perhaps that I think, oh, one day I'll buy that thing, one day. Well, let's put that into action. So look, I suppose, do a bit of research. Things like Instagram and Etsy are places to go for finding some cool art. And I suppose also think about what type of art could I like look into buying or putting some investment into. So it could be, I suppose we talked about poems, some writing, but also it could be a bit of artwork. My friend makes scrunchies, so I might buy some scrunchies off her. It could be something like really like homemade and cool. Could be a print, could be some candles, or it could be that you invest a little bit of money into someone's like side project, side hustle. It could be buying an EP of an artist that you like. Yeah, so there's basically loads of stuff out there at the moment, isn't there? And I think, well, I suppose we've talked about this, but I definitely know I'm not spending as much money mm-hmm. at the moment. So I'd love to portion some of that money off to supporting artists and trying to support people that maybe I've had on my radar for a little while.
Yeah.
And I think as someone creative, I absolutely love seeing what other people make, particularly art forms where I'm like, I couldn't do that myself.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you're not someone who is particularly artistic or create, or you don't feel like you are very good at making things, then there's a whole breadth of stuff out there. So yeah, look into stuff, do a bit of research, and then like actually just sign off on it and buy something that'll help someone out. And also it's not just that, it's what we're talking about in terms of value. It's if when you buy something off someone, it's you're saying, I think this is like worth investing in. I think you are worth investing in. I think your art is worth investing in. And I think that's just so worthwhile. So that's my creative kernel.
That's great. Buy some art. I'm actually looking at some art as I'm speaking to you.
Oh.
I've actually been really struck by this while I've been trapped indoors, that I've got a number of things that I've bought or have been given over the years by people I know who are artists. And I just always think if I won the lottery, not that I enter the lottery, but if I had loads of money, I would buy loads of work from other people.
Yeah.
If I had unlimited funds, I would just spend all of it on art, I think. But so I have over the years tried to do it as much as I can, but I never have any money to do it. But once or twice I've bought things. But I'm looking at the moment at two pieces by Claire Fleck. So Claire is a photographer now, but she did her degree in costume design. And when she did her final project, she made costumes from The Night Circus by Erin Morgenstern. And she created some prints of her sketches. Mm. And they were just beautiful. And I really wanted to buy them, and I had no money. And Claire to be honest, they were prints that hadn't quite come out right. But she gave them to me, and I've got them framed, I've got them on my bedroom wall. And I mean, every day I kind of vaguely look at them when I'm standing at my mirror. But because I'm now working in my bedroom, I'm finding myself looking at them all the time, and I love them.
Yeah.
But I love them, but I also love that there's a story behind them. So I look at them and I think, oh, I wonder how Claire's getting on. And I think about that book, and I think about the inspiration that, so often art has a story behind it too, which is cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can't go wrong.
No, you can't.
Have you got any wisdom for the week?
Yeah, wisdom for the week is, I think, linking into what you've said a bit already, but make an event out of something. So I suppose, I think at the moment, everything is a bit stretchy, weird, but it's just really fun to have something to look forward to in the week.
Yeah.
So it could be that you decide, okay, on Friday night, we're going to do something fun. Or it could be that you kind of look forward, you kind of plan a certain meal or plan a certain route around your local park that you can look forward to. So that's my wisdom for the week. So last week, me and my flatmates, we had a sort of like fancy dinner where we all dressed up and I made margaritas. It was great. And then this week we're having a sleepover. And it's something to look forward to that I think almost like helps you understand the week a little bit and gives it a bit of an anchor. So that's my wisdom for the week. Plan something you can look forward to.
I like that. I do Friday night drinks with my friends Joe and Anne.
Oh, so nice.
I love it. It has become a thing that I really look forward to. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's great. Mine would be about rest, I think. So I'm taking a few days off. I'm going to take tomorrow and Monday and Tuesday off. I've been meaning to put a wee bit of holiday time in anyway. And it's really hard with the juggling that I'm doing at the moment of different jobs to do that. And I considered not. And I sat down yesterday, looked at my diary, looked at my day-to-day book and thought, actually, I need to do this. So I don't know what the wisdom is. It's more of the challenge to me is how, because there's a little bit of me, it's been partly about juggling it with work, but there's also a wee bit of me, I'm a wee bit scared of what holiday slash rest slash time off looks like when I'm not going to be doing anything different really from what I'm doing. So I suppose I can report back next week on how I get on with that. But I think I'm going to put some things in so that I have, like you say, some plans. Particular things I want to watch or read or do, and try to disengage from screen. I think that's probably going to be quite an important thing. I'm not sleeping. Well, I'm sleeping reasonably well, but I'm not sleeping very long. I'm waking up after about 5.5-6 hours. So, yeah, I'm kind of hoping I can get my sleep rhythm a bit better as well.
Resting well.
I suppose paying attention to your body in that. So I definitely think for me, I got to a point a couple of days ago where I thought, do you know what? I do need some time off.
Yeah.
I can sense it in myself. I know that I'm easily irritable. I know that I'm just as a wee kind of underlying, actually, you need to. For me, it often bubbles up and I start to feel a bit resentful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, actually, whenever that happens, right, it's time to actively do something about taking some
time
rest. Time
to rest.
And I need to put that in place. So nobody else is going to say to me, Fiona, you should take some rest. Well, people are, but I won't pay attention to them. So I need to actually pay attention to myself. So resting well is going to be
Love it.
Brilliant. So next week, after we've rested, we have a little plan.
We're going to talk about well-being.
Yeah.
Have a little bit of chat.
And not in a mushy way. No. Well-being, I always feel, sounds a bit mushy, doesn't it?
You're like self-care. No, we're going to talk a bit about maybe some physical well-being stuff, maybe some mental well-being, bit of this, bit of that.
Mm-hmm.
We don't plan very much, so
no. But what are the elements that we need to see us through this time?
Mm-hmm.
So we're quite up for suggestions and feedback, as we keep saying. I meant to name check Susie Sheriffs actually, because a few weeks ago I name checked Neil Sheriffs, who had responded to something we'd said, and Susie, his daughter, who's a good friend of mine, with whom I have Marco Polo conversations. So Susie was slightly miffed because she said, I introduced my dad to a podcast and I thought about it first. And then I keep forgetting to name check her. But there was a point to this. Oh yeah, no, I love it. I love it when people come back and say, oh, I'm listening to your podcast and here's what I think. Susie was going to put us in touch with people connected to professional football. I just didn't do anything about it. She was on it.
She was on it. We weren't.
So yeah, any feedback on what's helping you in this season would be good. We can chat about that.
Yeah.
Usual means of communication apply.
Yeah.
So in the meantime, this has been
Hollow
and Substantial.
Thank you very much for listening.